ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
When the city of Flint, Michigan, discovered its water supply to homes and businesses had dangerous levels of lead poisoning the city's residents, there was national outrage. And while the situation in Flint is slowly improving, huge questions remain as communities across the country ask, could it happen here? On this edition of UWM Today, we meet one of UW-Milwaukee's most prolific researchers who's developed special high-tech sensors that can detect contaminants in the water that we drink. Junhong Chen is a distinguished professor of mechanical and materials engineering in UWM's College of Engineering and Applied Sciences and is our guest here on this edition of the program. Junhong, welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be back. You know, we talked to each other about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, periodically. And it's been way too long because so much has happened with you and with your work since the last time you were on the program. Let's begin with the story of Flint, Michigan, because anyone who has seen the horrible stories of families, mothers, children dealing with this contaminated water that's coming out of their pipes is, I ask, how in the world could that happen? And the fact is that it didn't have to be this bad, right?
That's true. You know, unfortunately, that's really a truly, you know, horrible catastrophe we should have avoided. You know, I know, you know, at the end, this crisis has become not only a technical problem, but also a societal problem. But if we had sensors that was able to detect this lead in our drinking water from our taps, we would have been able to act on this earlier, much earlier. You know, so that's some of the things we're trying to develop. So one of the situation with this Flint-like, you know, lead contamination events is not unique to Flint. That's really truly to the nature of the aging infrastructure we have in this country. So the average age of our drinking water infrastructure is about 45 years. So it's fairly old. And some of the pipelines, you can imagine, you know, they are already deteriorated to a point that's leaking and things can get into. And some of the things from the pipeline materials can get into the water. And lead is particularly one of the potential concern here, because, you know, earlier days, you know, many of the pipelines contain the lead, not only the pipelines, but also many of the water equipment. They also contain lead for many different purposes.
Because it was a reasonably priced product. It was a cheaper way to go ahead and create the line through which that water goes.
Correct. And it's especially it's very good for welding pipelines together. You know, the lead has this unique property. So it's being used widely in the pipelines. So now, you know, once it's in there, so if there's any erosion or corrosion happening for the pipeline, the lead can come out into the drinking water. That's essentially what happened to the Flint drinking water system. The city has switched the drinking water source from the Detroit water to the Flint River, which is very corrosive with all this salts in the water and acidity in the water. So the lead can easily come out from the pipelines into the drinking water. And the current practice is really to putting the phosphate, you know, inhibitors into the water system so that those phosphates can coat the inner surface of the pipeline.
It's like a lining that the phosphate does.
Exactly. So they forgot to use that in the first place, and then, you know, combined with this aging infrastructure, this happened, unfortunately.
And of course, the disaster continues to be seen in pictures of homes that still don't have usable, potable water supply coming to feed those families.
Right. Even after, you know, more than a year after this, you know, elevation of this crisis, you know, many of the homes are still experiencing the lead contamination because that's the nature. When you try to replace the pipelines in the system, you actually juggle loose some of the lead, and those lead can come into the water and can hide anywhere in the system, and it's very difficult to flush it completely. So that's why we still see some of the lead from the piping system even after the initial removal. And that removal process or replacement process takes time. My collection is, so far only a very small fraction of those pipelines has been replaced. A majority has not been completed yet. It takes years to complete.
And it's not just Flint, Michigan with lead water pipes, but communities all over the country, as you point out, have these older infrastructures, these networks of pipes that have been feeding water to homes for decades. Here in Milwaukee, we have many, many, many homes, thousands of homes that still have lead piping coming into the home. Now, the difference here in Milwaukee is we're not putting corrosive river water into our water treatment plant and thus sending it on into those lead pipes. And so we don't yet have that sort of crisis, but there still is the underlying risk, and I stress risk, that somewhere along the line that lead can leach out and get into the water that is consumed by all of us, and especially children who are so susceptible to the effects of lead.
Yep, that's exactly the case. So this is not a unique problem to Flint. It's a pervasive problem throughout the nation, including here in the state of Wisconsin, and here in Milwaukee, where we have a huge reservoir of fresh water. And, we don't have any complaints on the source water. The water is so good here. But the problem is not in the source water, but in the pipelines that's transporting this water to our household for our drinking purpose.
And so that's the background that brings us up to the story we're going to tell our listeners about today. Because, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, if only the people in Flint had that canary in the coal mine, that signal that there is indeed something in that water that shouldn't be there, and that is where one of your inventions comes in.
Yeah, right. So the nature of this contamination also, I should add, it varies from house to house. Really depends on not only the city pipeline, but also the service line connecting the city pipeline and the household, and then also the pipeline in our individual houses. So each house is unique in that sense. And this is a time-dependent event as well. At one point, you may have super clean water. At another time, you may have water containing some lead. So frequent checking of the water quality is so important. But in order to do frequent checking, you need to make sure this testing can be cost effective, that people can afford to. So that's what we're trying to develop. So this handheld device you just described is essentially for people who, as users of the drinking water or the fresh water, can test the water quality from their kitchen, right, using the water from their tap. So that it's similar to the glucose testing at home. Instead of using blood here, we're using water from the tap. So if it costs only a few bucks, for example, for our users to test out their water quality, that really adds another protection for our drinking water safety for average people. Because, if nobody else's house is happening with the contamination, just in your house, you can catch those contamination really quickly, and then you can look into solutions. And there are potential solutions to address this type of issues.
And up until now, in order to test your water for these contaminants, you'd have to capture a sample, send it off to a laboratory, wait for the test to take place, pay for that test to take place, and then get the results back. And what you've done with your colleagues at UWM is to develop tiny little sensors that can eliminate that that outside testing process.
Correct. So you mentioned one expensive method to test the water quality, which is the standard method, sending samples to the analytic labs to do the analysis. It takes not only the money between $30 to $50 a sample, and also it takes hours to days to get the results. So it's not only expensive, but also costly, right? Time-consuming. The second method that is available right now is really the test strip type of, paper strip type of method. You can purchase those from Amazon.com, for example. It costs $10, but it's not working well. Sometimes it works, other times it doesn't work. If it works, it gives you the qualitative measurement of lead, whether it's safe or unsafe, but it does not tell you how much concentration you have. So here's the problem. The action level advised by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for lead in water is 15 parts per billion, right? So, but it doesn't mean when you drink a water containing 10 parts per billion, lead is safe. Any level of lead in the water, in the drinking water, is unsafe. So I think the users have the right to know the exact concentration of the lead in their water so that they can find an appropriate solution to that. So that's the technology we're trying to develop. Not only that, our technology will also lead to more cost-effective way to do the detection. So it really combines the high-end analytic lab analysis with the low-cost test strip approach available on the market right now. So it's a sort of in-between, but with the cost of the test strip, you can have digital and quantitative measurements of lead in the drinking water. And you can do it on your own in your house without any training needed. So that's what we're trying to introduce to the marketplace.
So what do these little sensors look like, and how do they operate?
Yeah, so it is fairly small, made on the silicon wafer with a size of smaller than a nickel. And we can also integrate this type of small sensors, many of them into the single chip, so that you can simultaneously detect different contaminants in the water. Now, the way it works is, we actually pattern nanomaterials, in this case graphene material, between metal electrodes so that we can measure the conductivity of the graphene. When you have contaminants present in the water, it can bind to the surface of the graphene that can change the conductivity of graphene, which can be measured. So that's the way we measure the presence of this contaminants, including lead. Now, the signal strength is also proportional to the concentration of lead, and that's how we can figure out the concentration of the lead. So the detection mechanism itself is pretty simple, but it's so powerful because this is a platform technology, which means you can engineer different probes onto the surface of graphene to achieve the detection of a wide range of contaminants in water. Lead is only one of them. We also showed we can detect bacteria such as E. coli bacteria, and also potentially some nutrients such as phosphate ions that's very common from agriculture runoff. So eventually, our hope is to be able to multiplex an array of the sensors, each targeting different things analyzed in the water, to do the simultaneous detection. So that would be really powerful. So in your home, you can detect simultaneously the presence and the concentration of lead, mercury, arsenic, bacteria, and others from your drinking water. That really ensures the safety of your drinking water.
So you've come up with this novel method for testing the quality or the purity of the water. And I understand that companies, businesses that are in the water industry are very interested in this technology.
Exactly. From early days, in fact, when we had the initial thought to test our technology for the water application, that initial thought came from the conversation with our industrial partners. They told us, they're looking for sensors that can detect lead in the first place. Lead has been around for many years, and our industries are trying to find better ways to detect lead, many years ago. So So we have worked with several companies over the years to actually develop this technology from the laboratory research to a stage that can, show you, for example, from the recent National Science Foundation Science Nation video, that prototype, you know, it has evolved quite significantly over the last couple of years in particular. You know, that's through the collaboration with our industrial partners. There's a lot of benefits of doing that, which we can talk more in the next few minutes.
You know, we really should underline the support and the interest that you've received from the federal government. You mentioned the National Science Foundation. They actually are funding a portion of the research that you've been doing. And you mentioned the video. They've produced an amazing video that describes the way in which the technology coming out of your laboratory could have an impact on homes across America.
Yes. So this project, actually, or this technology, is linked to a number of grants from National Science Foundation. And in fact, it illustrates a really powerful way to translate the technology from the initial discovery to the marketplace. So the first grant related to this technology was a fundamental research grant, you know, that was showing this particular platform based on graphene that works well for detection of trace amount of analyze in liquid media, including water and blood as well. Now, the second grant is the IUCRC grant, which is Industry University Cooperative Research Center grant that's funding our UW-Milwaukee site as well as Marquette site here, the Water Equipment and Policy Center. And that grant, it really enabled us to demonstrate proof of application of this technology in the water field. And then following that, the current project which we have been discussing is the Partnership for Innovation grant, again supported by National Science Foundation, but with matching fund from our industrial partners. And this project specifically is to prototype this technology that lead to this handheld device we have been discussing about as well.
So not only do you have the basic science and technology that helps to do the measurement, but you're now at the stage of developing a commercial application for this.
Exactly. You know, so one of the major issues with the scientific innovation is in the academic setting, we're developing fundamental research to a point that is enough for publication, but not enough for developing into a product. And companies, on the other hand, you know, they have lots of expertise in engineering different devices and products, but they have to have a technology that has already been developed to a point that they can take on for further development. So there's a gap between the end of the academic research, typical academic research, and the beginning of the industrial commercialization development. So that gap needs to be filled. What we are developing in this PFI Partnership for Innovation project is essentially a project that's bridging this gap, and which is very critical. I think it is an example that can be utilized by many other researchers, you know, who has a vision to bring the technology from the initial idea to the marketplace. So, but this particular phase of the project, it also heavily depends on the collaboration between academic researchers and industrial partners, because each side can contribute to a unique strength to that project needed to bring this technology onto the marketplace.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. I'm Tom Lujak, and joining us in the studio is Junhong Chen. Junhong is a distinguished professor of mechanical and materials engineering at UWM, also recently named a fellow of the National Academy of Inventors. Congratulations on
your
acceptance.
Thank you. That's a great honor.
That is a wonderful honor. Very, very exclusive society. Junhong has created the technology for a new, wonderfully inventive and I think impactful technology to measure contaminations in water using a handheld device with tiny itty-bitty little sensors that are there doing the testing that otherwise might have taken days and hundreds of dollars to do, all of it perhaps being done on a scale that could bring these into everybody's home. Junhong, one of the areas I wanted to talk about besides the water work that you're doing is the application for these tiny sensors in measuring other threats. And I know that we mentioned the National Science Foundation grants that you've received. You've also received funding to take a look at diseases, at whether or not you could use these little sensors to quickly measure the potential threat of disease in our environment.
Yes. So we have another project specifically targeting the detection of Ebola virus in our blood, and that's essentially another variation of this technology. As I mentioned, this is a platform technology. Depending on the type of probe you put onto graphene, you can target specific analyte. So in the Ebola detection case, we would engineer a Ebola protein, antibody, onto the surface of the graphene to target specifically Ebola virus, related agents. So we have already showed that we can achieve that low concentration detection for Ebola virus outbreak. But originally, we had planned to detect this in saliva, which turns out, to be very challenging because we have to know the correlation between the Ebola proteins in the saliva versus in the blood. So that's something that that is missing in this picture, relies on the medical advancement. So we ended up with detecting Ebola virus protein in our blood samples.
So Junhong, these tests that you're able to do for Ebola, is it possible to use these sensors for measuring other diseases or other contaminants in the environment?
Absolutely. That's one of the goals we are trying to accomplish. For many of the diseases, we cannot do the measurements at home right now, except the glucose measurement, So we have to go to hospital to take a blood draw and then do the analysis. And unfortunately, it's getting faster nowadays, but still, it's not as convenient as, doing the testing at home. So our vision is really to be able to enable this home test with many diseases, using the technology we're developing. So as a platform technology, imagine if we can put on different probes targeting another biomarkers of a disease, including cancer diseases, then we would be able to do this type of testing at home. So you can get the results faster and at a low-cost fashion without training. I'm not saying this technology is going to replace the conventional hospital analysis, but at least it can provide a pre-screening technology for this type of diseases. So indeed, if it turns out to be positive, then you can go to hospital to do a more rigorous analysis. So that saves a lot of hospital visits, unnecessary visits, and save a lot of medical costs. So that's really the vision we are hoping to see.
Your training is in mechanical engineering. You have a master's, a PhD in that discipline. Did you ever imagine when you were going to school and working on those degrees, knowing you were going to eventually teach at the university, did you ever imagine that you would be sitting here today talking about not only a new technology you created, but a company that you founded to go ahead and commercialize or market this?
Not really. This would not have happened, without the education I have received, many of the collaborators along the way, and, many of the support, as you can imagine, from our university, from our industrial partners. This has been really, really powerful over the years, in particular, I think, this is the unique situation here for the Milwaukee. We have a large number of corporations, and we have developed one of the largest, water clusters in the world. That's the Water Council. and also the sporting industries. You know, I have greatly benefited from this partnership with our company partners. You know, in this case, you know, for the water sensing we are discussing, we are hoping to bring this product into the marketplace, and the companies are, you know, very supportive in not only promoting the development of the prototype we just discussed, but also further to take this product onto the marketplace, because there's effort needed for scale up the manufacturing to lower the cost of the device, etc. So
so you become a businessman at the same time that you're a scientist.
I'm learning business aspect.
You thought your education was done with that PhD, and here you're becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah, right. You know, I'm learning that entrepreneurial aspect of the myself. You know, but it's really rewarding. I can tell you. The companies, you know, have taught us initially, actually, you know, when we started this PFI project, prototyping project, you know, they are traditional manufacturing companies. And this sensor takes, you know, graphene material, the MEMS fabrication that is way beyond their traditional manufacturing capability. So they worry about manufacturing. If the technology is successful, who is going to deliver this manufacturing for them? So we you know, looking into the you know, startup companies, you know, we have established through the UWM, the spin-off company NanoAffix Science LLC, then we thought about maybe we can use this as platform to bridge this manufacturing gap. So if we are successfully developing this technology, we could potentially scale up the manufacturing through NanoAffix. That's essentially what we're trying to do. And the companies are looking to support this effort. And I really appreciate, you know, this potential wonderful continuing collaboration with them.
You know, when UW-Milwaukee was named one of America's top research universities this past year in the Carnegie classification, one of the top 115 out of, what, more than 4,600 universities, a great honor to the university. A lot of people said, yeah, but what does that really mean for us here in Milwaukee? I think your work, the company you've started, the work you're doing with other companies already in existence here, is a classic example of how that technology and that science that comes out of the laboratories can be translated into jobs, into companies that grow and expand.
Exactly. You know, if you look at the innovation pathway from the idea to the commercial product or process, you know, it takes manpower, it takes facility, it takes, you know, great ideas. You know, through this water sensor development, we see we have already showed a powerful, you know, streamlined process to deliver this technology onto the marketplace. So this R1 University can offer great talents, great ideas, and the facility, you know, we have been developing, you know, some of the facilities we have is really state of the art. So those are all necessary elements for building this innovation ecosystem in this area, in the water area, you know. So that's so critical to empower the economic development for the region.
Well, Junhong, keep up the great work. You are our standard bearer in terms of how we commercialize the intellectual property to the benefit of society. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Tom.
Junhong Chen, UWM's Distinguished Professor of Mechanical and Materials Engineering and a relatively new member of the National Academy of Inventors, just announced recently, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We will see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.